When you read a novel, or even when you read scripture, do you put yourself into the everyday life of the author? Quite often we can tell from the context what was happening in their world at the time of writing. Case in point, we just returned from a very busy holiday covering three of the Maritime provinces. And during the daytime, we spent many hours driving, visiting restaurants and places of interest, and at the same time, enjoying the ocean. Even though the days and often into the evenings were very busy, there was something happening in the world that kept us riveted to the television screen. At the end of each day, and sometimes very early in the morning, we were up watching the television. Of course, I'm referring to the Olympics, Paris 2024. Whenever a major global event such as the Olympics is happening, my inclination is to explore it with a view to future sermons. There's a certain feeling of awe involved in being a part of, if only vicariously, such an age-old, far-reaching, and all-encompassing activity, even if it is only cheering on your favorite team or athlete. This particular Summer Olympics consisted of 16 days of competition between 204 nations, sending 10,714 athletes to compete in 329 events in 32 different sports with 48 different disciplines. That means separate men's and women's activities and events, as well as individual and team events. Just watching the opening ceremonies with all those boats filled with cheering participants sailing down the Seine River was particularly striking. Or maybe it was just my connection to insurance that made it so memorable. Just setting that up would have been an insurance nightmare. But let's leave the present for a moment and take a look at some history of the Olympic Games. We find the first preserved record of the Olympic Games from the year 776 before the Common Era. And yet, that most probably was not the first time ever that the Games had been held. The Games were held in Olympia on the Peloponnese Peninsula, which was the name of ancient Greece. To put that into context, the timeline coincides pretty much with the time of writing of the scriptures we know as 1st and 2nd Samuel. By the 6th century before the Common Era, the Olympics had become the most famous of all Greek sporting events. From that first recorded Olympics, only one event is highlighted. Won by a cook named Corybus, it was a 192-meter foot race called the Stade, from which we get our word stadium. Since the founding of the Games in antiquity, one thing has remained constant. The Games have always been held every 4 years. The current Olympiad, which started in Athens in 1896 of the Common Era, with 280 participants from 12 nations in 43 events, has continued with that tradition, alternating every 2 years with the Winter Games. As with most of the traditions that have come down to us from antiquity, the Olympics have their origins in what we've come to call paganism. They began as an honor to the Greek god Zeus. The Games fell out of favor 1,500 years ago when Emperor Theodosius I banned all pagan festivals, ending a 12-centuries-old Olympic tradition. Controversy has always dogged the Olympics, even right up to modern times. Substance abuse, gender issues, political situations all continue to plague the organizers. Many Christians boycotted this Summer Olympics because of the entertainment section of the event. Whatever the theme of that segment, it couldn't diminish the hard work, dedication, sacrifice, and expense that goes into the making of an Olympic athlete. Young people give up their everyday lives, devoting themselves to train vigorously in their sport in hopes of winning an Olympic medal. Their efforts and achievement are remarkable, in spite of a questionable entertainment segment that only lasted about an hour, compared to years of training, pain, sacrificing friends and family, and concentrating full time on nothing but their sport. I find it a bit difficult to understand why anyone would boycott the Olympics when the entertainment segment had nothing to do with the athletes and their hard work. Now that the introduction's out of the way, let's get to the message for today. Earlier I said I looked at the Olympics with a view to finding references in Scripture. They're definitely there. There are so many references to running and winning a race that we cannot but think that they were influenced by events that were taking place in their daily lives at the time of writing. Could it be that an Olympic Games were taking place or had just happened? After all, they came every 4 years, just as they do now. We know for sure that the Apostle Paul would have been well acquainted with the Games since he traveled all around the Aegean Sea, the very area where the Games originated. And he also spent time in Athens while he was establishing the seven churches. Today I'm going to use the Message Bible to take a look at some of the scriptures that lead us to believe the authors were using the Olympic Games as inspiration for their messages. In 1 Corinthians 9, 24 to 27, Paul says, "You've all been to the stadium and seen the athletes race. Everyone runs. One wins. Run to win. All good athletes train hard. They do it for a gold medal that tarnishes and fades. You're after one that's gold eternally. I don't know about you, but I'm running hard for the finish line. I'm giving it everything I've got. No sloppy living for me. I'm staying alert and in top condition. I'm not going to get caught napping, telling everyone else all about it, and then missing out myself." Athletes train hard and sometimes suffer for their efforts. Our bodies are not always in tip-top shape, and it takes continuous perseverance and training to complete the race. One of my favorites to watch is Canadian decathlon gold medal champion from the last Tokyo Olympics, Damien Warner. This time he started well and was holding first place for the beginning couple of days. Then he started to drop back. And finally, after missing out in the pole vault, he withdrew from the competition. There can be all kinds of unforeseen disappointments, unfair practices, and physical setbacks. But we are each responsible for staying in our own lane and giving it our very best. There is a sense of accomplishment for those who only manage to hang in to the finish. In 2 Timothy 4, 7 and 8, Paul tells Timothy and Titus, "You take over. I'm about to die. My life and offering on God's altar. This is the only race worth running. I've run hard right to the finish. Believed all the way. All that's left now is the shouting, God's applause. Depend on it, he's an honest judge. He will do right, not only by me, but by everyone eager for his coming. And in Romans 5, 3 and 4, there's more to come. We continue to shout our praise even when we are hemmed in with troubles, because we know how troubles can develop passionate patience within us, and how that patience in turn forges the tempered steel of virtue, keeping us alert for whatever God will do next. In our case, the race is not about being first, the fastest, the most fit, or the strongest. Our race is about staying the course until we cross the finish line. It doesn't matter how many cross before us or how many are still coming behind. We don't have to drop out if the lead moves to someone else. Ours is an individual race that, because of the gift of God's grace, we are assured will end in victory. In his letter to the Galatians, Paul encourages them not to become distracted with things around them, but to concentrate on the important things, like obedience to the truth, so they are guaranteed the reward. In Galatians 5, 7, and 8, you were running superbly. Who cut in on you, deflecting you from the true course of obedience? This detour doesn't come from the one who called you into the race in the first place. Please don't toss this off as insignificant. There are some similarities, but also some differences between an Olympic race and the one we've been called to. Olympic athletes must start young and train hard to reach the games. We can come to the race late in life or early, and even if we have no prior training, we're guaranteed a reward if we just stay the course. There's often great financial cost for athletes' families, and in many cases, the governments of the countries they represent. In our case, God calls whom he will to the race. It doesn't matter if we're wealthy or living on the streets. Everyone called has an equal opportunity to cross the finish line. In the Olympic Games, competition is fierce, and being first is everything. But it doesn't matter if we don't get ahead of anyone else. God is no respecter of persons, as we've read many times. And even if we come in last, it's how we run the race that makes all the difference, not whether we beat out everybody else. In the Olympics, there's a stringent set of rules that all countries and athletes must adhere to in order to compete. In our race, we're given two very simple but yet incredibly complex guidelines. Matthew 22:37. Jesus said, "Love the Lord your God with all your passion and prayer and intelligence. This is the most important, the first on any list. But there is a second to set alongside it. Love others as well as you love yourself." These two commands are pegs. Everything in God's law and the prophets hangs from them. When an Olympian trains for a certain event, they start out by learning the course, how things are set up, where the boundaries are, what they need to achieve for success in their event. So too, King David said in Psalms 119, verse 32, "I'll run the course you lay out for me, if you just show me how." Like the Olympians, we don't need to stumble blindly along. Our course is clearly laid out for us. We learn the rules, the parameters of our lanes, and we stay the course until we cross the finish line. It takes years of training for an Olympic athlete to become the toned and honed body that competes for a gold medal. They sacrifice what we would call the normal teen and young adult growth period for rigorous schedules and body-punishing routines. Then when the race begins, they must give it everything they've got so as not to have a bad showing. While we sometimes must rein in our activities, we know that our strength does not come from within ourselves. In Isaiah 40, verse 31, "But those who wait upon God get fresh strength. They spread their wings and soar like eagles. They run and don't get tired. They walk and don't lag behind." So we can see that the authors of Scripture drew from the events happening in their daily lives, and some of those same events are still happening in our daily lives 6,000 years later. The lessons we can learn to keep us in the race may not be exactly like those of an Olympic athlete. But in the end, we are running towards a gold medal that never tarnishes. Our winning the race does not depend on years of rigorous training and enough money to cover every cost that may befall us throughout our lifetime in order to qualify for this race. We qualify because we have been freely called to participate by God Himself, the great author and finisher of our faith. In Matthew 24:13, "Staying with it," that's what God requires. Stay with it to the end. You won't be sorry, and you'll be saved. And in Hebrews 12:1-2, "Do you see what this means? All these pioneers who blazed the way, all these veterans cheering us on, it means we better get on with it. Strip down, start running, and never quit. No extra spiritual fat, no parasitic sins. Keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race we're in. Study how he did it, because he never lost sight of where he was headed, that accelerating finish in and with God. He could put up with anything along the way, a cross, shame, whatever, and now he's there in the place of honor, right alongside God."